You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
This is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA.
Look, in general, and we've been clear about this all around the world, we want individual citizens, no matter what government they live under, to be able to communicate freely and openly, transparently and reliably. And we've made that clear with respect to Iran, and we certainly continue to make that clear here with respect
to
China.
But have you made that clear to Apple?
Apple's a private company, Martha. They have to make decisions, and they have to speak for those decisions. But here at the White House, here in the administration, we want to see that individual citizens, whether they're protesting or not, but in this case, I know that's the context we're talking about, are able to communicate freely and openly.
No, they don't. They do not, because it involves China. This is December 1, 2022. You are listening to John Kirby, still trying to explain himself, get out of the box the White House has put him in, as to why they're going to take one action against Twitter, because it's now owned by Musk. Another action against anyone else, and in particular, in this case, Apple, because in China, the protests have been underway. They cannot get access to internet, but if they have an Apple phone, they can use an app on there called AirDrop and connect to each other without going through the internet and organize their protest and so forth. And this White House has taken an attitude. We believe in the right of the Chinese people to protest. Free, peaceable assemblies. The Chinese government does not accept that. And Joe Biden will not stand up to the Chinese, nor to Apple, and tell them, you've got to put that back. And in fact, they're considering dropping it entirely from their app store. And yet at the same time, they're going after Twitter because Elon Musk has it, and it was all fine when Twitter was being used to attack conservatives, Trump, so forth and so on. But now liberals are fearing that they might be under attack. So they're complaining, and suddenly the White House is also concerned about Twitter and what it might do to the integrity of the U.S., as if they have not already destroyed it. As always, I thank you for joining us. We are live streaming at rumble.com. You can go to rumble.com right now, enter in the search engine, Larry Connors USA. It'll take you to our page. You can do it right now and join us in studio, or you can watch it later. And, of course, if you miss any program, you go back to Rumble and see it, or you can also go to our podcast at larryconnorsusa.com. Each program will be put up as a podcast later in the day once we finish. I've got a couple guests today you want to hear from. Martin Meyer is the founder of the Christian Action Network, and he says there is an ugly truth about that Rev Wave that did not happen, why it failed. And when he explains why, you're going to nod in agreement. Yeah, that's probably true. And I'm also going to be joined today by John Daniel Davidson, the senior editor of The Federalist. I booked him originally to talk about the luxury fashion brands that condemn, but yet at the same time engage in child abuse. You know that magazine I told you about recently? They put out all these things. They had little girls with a lollipop and a teddy bear and looking kind of in a little negligee, things of this nature, promoting fashion and yet at the same time pedophilia. But I'm also going to need to talk to John about his thoughts on Twitter and how the White House is handling Twitter versus handling Apple. In fact, he just has an article that came out again today in the Federalist talking about a GOP with backbone would support Elon Musk, punish Apple, and fight for free speech on Twitter. He's right on every point. The only free speech this nation under this administration cares about is their free speech, not yours. And I'm also going to let you hear from Senator John Kennedy of Louisiana, which has an interesting, good Southern analysis of Joe Biden's energy plan. I love the analysis. And if you're a Yellowstone fan, we've got a clip from Yellowstone with Kevin Costner talking about an issue of environmental issues and oil and gas reduction, solar power. You want to hear that. Lock and load. Ready. On the right.
You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
I personally know at least three people who got sick from mold. It's not uncommon for homes, businesses to have a leak somewhere, and it doesn't take long for mold to start growing. Well, of course, I recommend Wellington Environmental. You don't want a company that's just going to clean up the water. Wellington has 34 years of experience. In fact, hospitals often have Wellington inspect and treat mold. Do what they do. Call 314-644-4930. 644-4930. Call Wellington for a mold inspection, air testing, professional remediation. 314-644-4930. 644-4930. AAA rated with a Better Business Bureau. Wellington Environmental. Your world. Cleaner. Better. Safer. Be well with Wellington. This segment of Larry Connors USA is brought to you by my friends at John Beal Roofing. Covering homes and businesses throughout the Midwest. Best quality. Lowest prices. John Beal. 1-800-NEW-ROOF. 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
Well, I started out with $1 gambled with a man and I won me another. Bought me a gun and I robbed my brother. I'm bad, but I don't care, boys. I'm gonna be a millionaire.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA. Waves.
Former Twitter executives are offering a mea culpa on their handling of the Hunter Biden laptop story. Finally, the former Twitter safety chief says in part, we didn't know what to believe. We didn't know what was true. There was smoke, and ultimately for me, it didn't reach a place where I was comfortable removing this content from Twitter. Well, they ultimately admitted that the censorship was a mistake.
Oh, yeah, they finally admitted it was a mistake to take all that content about the Hunter Biden laptop off Twitter. That was a Fox Business report quoting a former Twitter exec saying, we just didn't know what to make of it. We didn't know how much was true. We didn't know how much was fake. So we didn't know what to do because the government came to us. The FBI came to us and said, you need to be aware this could be Russian propaganda. And we bought it. We absolutely bought into it. We said, okay, we understand. And so they decided to keep the information about the Hunter Biden laptop story from breaking right before the election. You remember that. You remember the fact that it was available. First of all, the FBI had had it for a year. They had the laptop for a year. The New York Post got hold of the story, and then within weeks of the election, finally put the story out. Once they had all their facts lined up and they could verify it was exactly as it had been presented to them. And immediately if this New York Post issued its publication and then sent word out on Twitter and various big tech outlets it has various platforms on, it all got shut down. Just shut off. And then you got the state-controlled media, CNN and PBS and NPR, all the ones that your taxpayer dollars do support. And then the major networks, if you want to call them that now, certainly not journalistic networks, they all cratered. And the New York Times and the rest of them, they all walked away from it. because it was Russian propaganda. So no one knew about the story other than what was in the New York Post. And if you don't read the New York Post, you didn't see it. If you don't watch or listen to Larry Connors USA and similar programs, or you view other sources, you never knew there was ever a laptop, much less there were questions about it, or even that the government had claimed it was Russian conspiracy. Remember? So the election went forward. There have been a lot of questions. What would have happened if that information had been out there before the election? I want you to hear from Max Schlapp. Let me get his full title again. I think it's, I want to say chairman. We'll make sure I have it right. You have to bear with me. I don't like giving you false information. Matt Schlapp, yeah, he is chairman of CPAC. That is, of course, the Conservative Political Action Committee. He's on a Fox program and talking about the fact that Twitter is finally, as you heard in that opening business report from Fox, acknowledging one of their former Twitter employees that were controlling and censoring material. Now they finally acknowledge, you know, we were wrong, but we didn't know because we're stupid. We just did what we were told to do, and we thought if it is kept silent, we know it will probably help Biden, whereas if it went public, it would certainly hurt Biden. Here's Matt Schlapp on that very point.
For these former employees, it's too little too late. I think the federal government should be looking at charges. There is enough people who voted for Joe Biden who believe that the Hunter laptop story was disinformation because that's what the FBI and others were saying it was. And they said they told Mark Zuckerberg and they told Jack Dorsey at Twitter to be worried about people coming to them with outlandish stories. So they did everything they could to make it seem like the Hunter laptop story was not a legit story. And if you look at the polls, Ashley, there are enough voters who, had they known that that story was legit, they wouldn't have voted for Joe Biden. And so Twitter in and of itself affected the outcome of the 2020 election.
And I have told you that before, haven't I? I told you that before the first vote was cast in that election, it was already rigged. Oh, Larry, you're an election denier. I don't care what you call me. I mean, if you do, you got to call Hillary Clinton an election denier, Stacey Abrams an election denier. You've got to call, Jeffries, who's now the House Speaker, the minority House Speaker, first black House Speaker. He's also an election denier, as AOC, as Pelosi, as VP Harris, as Biden. So, right down the line. They never acknowledged that Trump legitimately won. And in Stacey Abrams' case, she never acknowledged officially that Kemp had won. Oh, she did, finally. I mean, she did. I called to concede. But then he won because we had a lot of people not being able to vote. We had restrictions on voting, voter suppression. So, see, she's still an election denier. In this case, I'm agreeing with Schlapp that, yeah, this information could have changed the election. I don't know if it would for sure, but everything indicates the fact that it was not out there. We don't know, do we? So as I say, before the first vote was cast, before anybody, either absentee, overseas, whatever process you want to use, before any vote was cast in that election, it was already facing interference from our own government. By the way, the Republican National Committee is suing Google for its bulk labeling of millions of RNC campaign mail communications to supporters and donors as spam. You might get something show up in your email and it will kick it into your spam file. I don't know if you checked your spam file lately. I have to admit I haven't. I don't know what's in there, but it's very possible that the Republican National Committee was trying to raise money during the midterms, and Google just Oh, we made a mistake on the algorithm. We didn't understand. We sent it to your spam, your trash mail, which you never open, you never see. Maybe you would have given money. Maybe you wouldn't. But they shut down the opportunity for it to be presented to you. And now we have China, of course, demanding Apple shut off AirDrop, which they did. The White House says it's supporting the protesters. Even French President Macron, who's in the White House today, put out a statement. The Canadians. I said Macron. Let me rephrase that. Prime Minister Trudeau of Canada put out a statement saying, we support the Chinese people to get out and protest peacefully. Did you see what the Canadian police and forces did to those in Canada who stood up against being locked down and being forced to take shots? They were not just rounded up. They were physically beat repeatedly on the streets in front of cameras. They didn't care. But the White House says it's not going to criticize Apple because it's a private business. But when it comes to Elon Musk and Twitter, well, let's go to Martha McCollum and her interview with the National Strategic Coordinator, John Kirby, for the White House.
We were just told that the White House will keep an eye on Twitter because they're concerned about the new Twitter 2.0 that Elon Musk is putting in, where he wants more free speech on Twitter. So they're going to keep an eye on Twitter, and yet you're taking a hands-off approach. You say there's been no communication with Tim Cook at Apple about this process in China with the Chinese government?
Martha, I'm not aware that there's been any conversations specifically with Apple on this particular issue. It's a private company. And as for Twitter, again, Martha, these are apples and oranges. We're talking about potential foreign investment issues, and I have nothing to report in terms of any investigations in that regard. But that was the general concern with respect to Mr. Musk's purchase of Twitter. This is a different issue. This is a policy issue inside of Apple.
See how they get around it? It's a policy decision inside of Apple. Well, whatever Musk decides to do with Twitter, it's his decision inside Twitter. Not exactly, Larry, because it might end up hurting some liberals and certainly the woke crowd. John Daniel Davidson, the Federalist, is going to join us in the next hour on a different subject, but I'll go over this with him as well, because he put out a column today that says that a GOP with backbone would support Elon Musk, punish Apple, and fight for free speech on Twitter. And what have we heard from the GOP except for a very few numbers of them? I'm listening. Are you hearing anything? I'm not hearing anything. Are you? I'm not hearing anything. You know why? Because they're pretty much silent. There are a few that are speaking out, obviously. DeSantis, Cruz, and Trump, and others like that. Yes, they are. But at the same time, and I cannot stress this enough, there's not much else being said. Apple's, as John points out, Apple's threat to remove Twitter from its app store for the crime of being a slightly more open forum for free speech under Elon Musk has been met with a chorus of outrage and substantive threats of congressional action by Republican leaders. He said, just kidding, which I'm glad got you too, didn't it? That opening line. He said, just kidding, Republicans have barely said anything about it. And establishment Republicans had said nothing at all, with the exception of Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, who offered his opinion on a matter outside his purview as governor. He said the Apple situation, not DeSantis, but John's argument here, the Apple situation perfectly illustrates why conservatives need to swap out their old labels for new ones as they swap out old ways of thinking about government power for a candid recognition of new realities and new imperatives. We discussed this in part the other day, and you know, remember how and why? Because it's being stated that even if the Republicans hold the House, Democrats might have a role in picking the next House Speaker. I got an email from a listener today, this morning, first thing when I opened up. How is it that Hakeem Jeffries is going to be the new Speaker of the House? I said, that's not what happened. He's been elected the minority leader because they won't control the House, but he'll be the leader for the Democrats in the House. But moderate Republicans trying to walk across the aisle and back slapping, happy slapping, you know, basically let's get together for drinks with some of the libs, or kind of letting them lead them down the road to, quote, moderation, which means you bow before us. And they might actually be able to swing some votes so they have a say in who becomes the House Majority Leader, the position now held by Nancy Pelosi. Now, you're not going to see a Democrat come back into that position, but if they Democrats that want people that they think they can use, abuse, they will get it as they strive to, let's have a kumbaya party and all put all this behind us. The same kind of people that are asking you to give them basically some lenience and allowances for how they treated you during COVID. And I say, no way in, you know the rest of it. Coming up, Respect for Marriage Act from one of the people involved directly in it. Stand by.
This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
While it is incredible that this legislation passed the Senate with a bipartisan effort, we passed this bill because the Supreme Court is threatening to take it away. We're reaffirming marriage equality because there are those who sit on that bench who want to take this away from us. And that's why I started writing, because, you know, it's not some frivolous thing. Marriage at the core of our marriage is this family. It is showing up for our children. It's being there for one another, for Pete and I. It's doing everything we can to make this, you know, a more perfect union for everybody. And the reason that we had to put that bill on the floor, the reason that we had to pass it, was because people are still threatening to take it away from us.
There's nobody threatening to take it away from you. They're threatening to say you cannot be punishing people just because they don't agree with you. And it's not the entire Supreme Court. In listening to those remarks, you'd think it's the entire Supreme Court or majority of them. Justice Thomas had said maybe the Supreme Court should reconsider contraception, same-sex marriage rulings. Doesn't mean they're going to take it away. Doesn't even say that they're going to do it, much less what ruling that would come out of it. You were listening then to Chastine Buttigieg. He's the husband of Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg, and talking about, you know, we just felt that we have to remind people this is something sacred. I'm looking at a piece written in Politico regarding this. And what happened immediately after a Roe v. Wade decision, those remarks from Thomas were made, in saying that maybe we need to go back and reconsider some other legislation and things that we have set up on a constitutional basis, as supposedly Roe v. Wade was set when it's not in the Constitution, and making it national constitution type processes when it's not. Neither is marriage, neither is contraception beyond that. But he's just raising the point. I don't know how much I would agree with him on every point, but this is where we are in this country. You can't even raise a question without people immediately challenging and, in fact, embellishing, exaggerating, and, in fact, lying about what you just said. So here you have Chasten Boutied saying, we felt we had to start speaking up. And then he talks about the real pressure that's going on right now is that why is the GOP, now he's expanded past the Supreme Court when it's just Justice Thomas, now he's taking it to the entire GOP party. Listen to this.
I don't know particularly why the Republican Party continues to focus on LGBTQ people. I think it's because we're an easy target, and I think it's because they don't have solutions to real issues. They're not interested in tackling issues that everyday Americans are facing, so they're choosing, you know, a vulnerable minority of Americans to continuously attack. You shared that Gallup poll at the top of the segment. Over 70% of Americans approve of marriage equality. Over 70% of American people believe in LGBTQ equality. And over 50% of Republicans believe in marriage equality. But as you saw yesterday, a majority of Republicans voted against it. And as you said, they're just wildly out of step with the American people right now.
There were a dozen Republicans who did vote with the Democrats on the Respect for Marriage Act. A dozen Republicans, I named them for you. One of them, many of you would know in the audience, Senator Blunt from Missouri, who did not run for re-election this time around. And when he refers to the Gallup poll, I'm not going to totally disagree on what he had to say. It's just a fact that, again, that doesn't mean anything. That's just a poll. I also agree on protections. But when he says, and he's going to do it again, I want you to hear him again say, we need to focus on real issues.
I think it's because they don't actually want to focus on what people are hoping they go to Washington and solve. It's because they just need to continuously stoke a culture war, to audition for their Fox News hit or to get some likes and retweets on Twitter. But that's not what leadership is about. It's about making people's lives better. And I'm so grateful that Senate Democrats focused on getting this done so they can go back to solving more issues for the American people.
Right, like getting us energy independent again. That's a real issue. This was not. Coming up, I want you to hear from the founder of the Christian Action Network on this point and also why the red wave failed.
You can email Larry at LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com. LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com.
Some car dealers might try to take advantage of you. One quick way to spot it, look at the sticker price. Jay Ackerman told me, especially in these times, he wants to reward the generations of buyers and the new customers. So Ackerman Toyota sells every car at sticker price. No markup. What you see is what you pay. Ackerman Toyota at Hampton and 44. Ackerman Toyota for life.
This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
Welcome back. Reminding you, we are live streaming as I speak. If you're listening to us live right now, go to rumble.com. Enter in the search engine one word, Larry Connors USA. It'll take you right to our Rumble page. You can join us live. I see many of you are, and many of you end up watching at a later time. I fully understand. My next guest is a founder of the Christian Action Network, beginning in 1990, a nonprofit organization created to protect America's religious and moral heritage through educational and political activism on national grassroots levels. Welcome aboard, Martin Moyer. Martin, glad to have you on board, sir.
Thanks for having me on, Larry.
Well, I'll tell you, here's a reason, a couple of reasons I want to get into. One, we want to talk about you put out a piece about how the red wave mania left the Republicans seeing red, and you described it as the ugly truth behind the election night moonshine. I'll come back to that in a moment. But before I do, just before you joined us, we were running clips and listening to Chasten Boutied, the husband, the Transportation Secretary Pete Boutied, and he's talking about it's so good that the Marriage Respect Act got passed with the help of, as he said, bipartisan, that were It included 12 Republican senators, one being Blunt, who is no longer running for Senate this time around in Missouri anyway. He's done. And then they said there's a Gallup poll that says 70% of American people believe in LGBT equality. I'll be honest with you. I believe in equality for everyone. But what I saw in the Marriage Respect Act was basically attempts to punish anyone who didn't agree. Your thoughts?
Well, you know, that's the agenda of the LGBTQ movement, is to punish people who not only disagree with them, but who do not do what they want them to do, such as say the right pronouns when you address them, and many other things. So it's not surprising. The LGBT movement is very powerful, extraordinarily powerful. I really can't think of a political movement more powerful than they are. They have tons of money, and they basically are dictating to America how we think and how we talk and how we raise our kids. I mean, it's, to me, it's obscene, but that's where we're at right now. I'm not sure about those polls, though.
Well, I know. I was going to say, this is a Gallup poll, and you can always question those. But it said over 50% believe in marriage equality. Well, what do you mean by marriage equality? But the other issue being that he said the Republicans are absolutely in major out of step with the American people. Major out of step with American people.
Well, I'm not sure that that's the case. We could probably have, you know, an hour-long discussion.
Oh, I know
this,
we could,
but,
yeah.
You know, the idea that people are currently just virtual signaling and saying what the LGBTQ movement wants them to say has a lot to do with that. People are afraid to say and post stuff and
there you go.
Get their own views
yes.
on how they feel about this movement. And I don't blame them. I mean, people are being fined. You know, people are losing their jobs. People are being sent to sensitivity training classes. There's a lawsuit now that could end up with a wedding photographer in New York going to jail. I mean, people know about this stuff. So,
well, do you really think
they're going to give you honest opinion?
And on that point, the photographer and the cake baker, if they don't want to do it for a gay couple, they should be allowed to say no. It's against my religion. And yet there's where they want to use their power and say and start slamming and slandering and suing. But I don't see them going to a Muslim photographer or a Muslim cake baker. They always go find a Christian cake baker or photographer.
But because they're afraid of the Muslims.
Yes.
You know.
And they wouldn't get treated right in that country either. So here's, you know, I want to look at this in the article you put out that you said it's an ugly truth behind what happened. There was no, as you said, they woke up, American Republicans woke up with a red wave hangover. What went wrong? You're calling it an ugly truth.
Well, we all drank from that red wave Kool-Aid, didn't we? But look, you know, I wanted to know after the elections were over on November 8th and woke up November 9th, and I was talking to people. They all seemed to be rather depressed. They were angry, but the word I heard most was that they were in despair. And I was wondering, how did we get there? How did this red wave theory start? Who put it out there? How long did it last? Why did we all buy into it? And I spent a couple of days researching it, and I'm going to say I'm not an election expert by any means, but I have been a journalist for over four decades. So I did take time to investigate where it all began. And it really started with a New York Times article that ran in mid-December that said, "Will Trump ruin a red wave in 2022? Just the headline alone is assuring you a red wave is going to happen, and it will happen. Only Trump can ruin it.
Yes,
right?
So yeah. Two bullets fired at the same time. You're right.
Yeah, absolutely. And the question is, why did New York Times even suggest a red wave was about to happen? Now, there were indications that something was afoot in America, that Republicans were angry, and that perhaps they did have a chance to have a huge showing.
And not just Republicans. You're talking about independents and a lot of Democrats. Energy, inflation,
absolutely.
all these other issues that family deals with at the breakfast table every day.
Oh, yeah. You had parental rights on the table. You had the Department of Justice calling parents terrorists. Also, you know, you had three Democrats that were retiring, that had retired this past year. There were large Republican turnouts during the primaries. So there were things that would indicate that perhaps a red wave could happen. And seems like all the media got on board with the New York Times article in December and January, February and March. But then reality began to set in, and the Cook Political Report, which analyzes political elections, brought everything back to reality, saying, look, you know, the Republicans already have 213 seats. There's not a lot of chance that they're going to pick up that many, because there's not that many vulnerable Democrat seats in these heavily controlled Democrat districts out there.
Even Newt Gingrich was predicting 40-plus seats to be picked up.
Yeah, and how was that going to happen, though, really?
Yeah.
You know, there were a couple of red waves that happened in the past, one in 1994 and one in 2010, where the Republicans picked up 54 seats and 63 seats, respectively. But in those years, the Republicans started with only a handful of seats to begin with. They had 176 seats in 94 and 179 seats in 2010. This year, they started with 213. They already had 45 more seats than they had back then. So to think that they were going to pick up 45 more seats this election was pie-in-the-sky thinking. And I'm not just saying that. That's what the media started reporting
right
back in April of this year and all the way through August. By the time September rolled around, the media and the political pundits and the election analysis people
Senator Cruz, all agreed that the red wave was dead. Senator Cruz,
yeah.
Oh, yeah, Senator Cruz predicting a tsunami as well. I'm looking at your article here, and again, you're listening to Martin Moyer. He is the founder of Christian Action Network. Christian Action Network, I apologize. What about the issue, and I didn't see it here in your article, that the Democrats outplayed them in the sense that, hey, let's get into the primaries and vote in someone we know we can defeat. In other words, let's go vote in the Republican primary and pick a candidate we want to run against.
Yeah, what, they spent like $34 million throughout the United States doing that, right?
Yes.
And I'm not sure how many, well, it's like almost a couple of dozen people they selected to beef up their campaigns to defeat more moderate Republicans that they thought they might lose to this coming election. So they wanted to put in like mega supporting candidates there. But here's the hypocrisy of that, right? So, and we heard this year the Democrats come out and talk about how MAGA supporters were against democracy, against the Constitution, against the rule of law, that they were going to destroy America. Then on the other hand, they're spending $34 million to help these people get elected. I mean, it's insane, you know, and the media had not really reported that.
That's a hypocrisy.
They didn't talk about
typical
hypocrisy
yeah.
that was going on here.
Martin Moyer, I want to thank you very much. And again, he's the founder of the Christian Action Network. Great piece. You can look it up and find it under Martin Moyer, Christian Action Network. We will talk to you again on a future subject, sir.
Thank you, Larry. Good to be here.
You bet. Thank you for your time, sir. Coming up, the FDA is going to make some changes when it comes to blood donations involving homosexuals. You need to hear this.
You can connect with Larry on Twitter at Larry Connors USA.
Here's exciting news for Cafe Napoli. Soon there will be Napoli Sea. Unique, exquisite, the finest, freshest seafood, lobster, crab, the best caviar. Napoli Sea will be next door to Napoli 3 on the streets of St. Charles. So it's going to be easy to satisfy your seafood craving or the finest Italian food. Napoli Sea, coming soon. Joining Cafe Napoli St. Charles, Town and Country, and Clayton.
Well, here it's fine.
This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
I need to bring you up to speed on something. I'm still gathering some of the information on it. It's passed earlier across my desk here, but I haven't had time to really focus on it. But just consider this. We already know that under Joe Biden, we've had 2 million illegals come into the country. 2 million. Often not vetted to see if they might be a terrorist. We have caught something like about 100 that are on no-fly list. But there are 600,000 or so getaways, so we don't know who they were and if they were on a terrorist list. And most likely, if they were using other clandestine ways to get across the border, because right now it's so open, you can just walk up and turn yourself in, and they take you in and then release you into the interior of the U.S. And Biden is still flying, even though there's a lot of complaints about Governor DeSantis flying illegals into Martha's Vineyard. Biden is still doing the same thing, dropping them off all over the country. But here is another breaking point. This is according to CNN and NNN. The border agency is expecting 9,000 to 14,000 economic migrants, is the way they call it. That's illegal border crossers, is what it is, after Title 42 barrier is lifted. That would add up to about 4.5 million migrants per year or more across our southern border. That would be more than one extra migrant for every American birth in the U.S. 4.5 million once Title 42 comes off. So the Joe Biden 2023 border plan would be 2 migrants for every American. They keep calling them migrants, but they're illegals. We do take immigrants into this country legally. And those who are on the waiting list to come into the country legally, they're being pushed and shoved deeper away. Now, to this story. I don't know how often you may have given blood or been in need of blood transfusion. And there are certain requirements and concerns about who gives the blood. I remember one time decades ago, I think maybe before our first child was born, my wife and I went, we were going to give blood at our church, and they refused her because she was underweight. Now, she wasn't physically underweight, but by their standards, she was, and she was not allowed to give. Perfectly healthy. She just took good care of herself, and she was less than what they said you should be if you're going to give blood. I didn't have that problem. Surprised! But you also were being questioned about, without directly intruding too much, reference some sexual issues, but the main thing was, at that time, was concern about HIV. New rules are coming from the FDA, and this is according to the Wall Street Journal. Potential, not even existing, but potential gay and bisexual male donors still need to complete a risk assessment questionnaire before they can give blood. But they're going to draft the new questionnaire and guidance. They're planning to lift more restrictions on gay and bisexual men when it comes to donating blood if they're in a monogamous relationship, even if they have not abstained from sex for 90 days. You could be heterosexual and come down with HIV. Your partner may have had an encounter with someone who had it, male and or female. It could be 2 or 3 layers deep. But if you're in a monogamous and pretty consistent with someone for 90 days, you'd probably know if you had it or not. But in this case, the FDA is deciding that it's going to lift restrictions on gay and bisexual men from donating blood. It's been doing it anyway for the last 7 years because the LGBTQ plus community has been demanding it. In 2015, they lifted a blanket ban on gay men donating blood, but still required them to wait a year if they were sexually active. During coronavirus, of course, the FDA reduced the 12-month wait to 3 months because we were low on blood supply. Now, there's a great interesting situation, isn't it? You're low on blood. You need more blood. We don't care if we get it from someone who's diseased. We got a patient in surgery. Give them diseased blood. We may save them in surgery. They may die later of the blood we give them. Do you see any sense, any common sense? No. Forget it. Coming up in the next hour, more efforts of the White House trying to explain why they're all about China and helping China and Apple, but they're going to target Twitter and Elon Musk. And before we wrap up, you like the TV series Yellowstone? Have you been watching any of it? Kevin Costner? We have a clip you want to hear because it deals with environmental issues and energy production. Stand by, please.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.